Good evening, everyone. John Jacob Schmidt here. I had a full day here dealing with some unexpected issues that required my immediate attention. It's all good. Everything is great. But it precluded me from being able to work on tonight's podcast. So tonight, when I get everything wrapped up, I'll be putting the finishing touches on this week's Partisan Radio so I can record that and upload it in the morning and have that uploaded by around noon tomorrow, Monday. Yesterday's broadcast on the American Christian Network was a very popular broadcast where in the third segment, at about the 30-minute mark, I answered a listener's letter from a young lady who's struggling with pacifism versus militarism. Where should we stand as Christians? This is really important because we're increasingly faced with the prospect of having to resist tyranny once again. Is that the right thing to do? There's more on this topic, of course. I believe it was last year that I did a podcast entitled Righteous Resistance. I've also been talking to Chris Ann Hall and collaborating with her on a posting I plan on producing and posting to RadioFreeRedoubt.com this week with several resources from Radio Free Redoubt, Chris Ann Hall, and her husband, who is a pastor, on this very subject. So keep checking back for that. Also, there are several events coming up over the next few months, so be watching for more details on that and be ready to mark your calendars, many speaking engagements and other events. You can also follow us on facebook.com/Radio Free Redoubt for the latest developments and announcements on those events and so much more. Have a blessed week, and I'll be in touch soon. This is John Jacob Schmidt. My name is your name, too. Out.
Radio Free Redoubt begins in 5, 4, 3, 2.
Welcome to the Voice of the American Redoubt. This is the John Jacob Schmidt Show. I am John Jacob Schmidt. Once again, honored to be your host. Welcome to all of you across Eastern Washington in the American Redoubt, in Northeast Oregon and North Idaho, and all of you listening to live streaming. And especially thank you for those of you in occupied territory tuning in wherever you may be outside the wire. We hope to encourage you, to inform you, and to prepare and equip you for the coming storm. We're going to be talking about that today. I had a listener letter asking about pacifism versus militarism. Great question, the way she presented it. I am going to deal with that today. We've got several announcements we'll be getting to. Don't forget, you can join us at RadioFreeRedoubt.com. That's with a silent B, redoubt, redoubt. That is a safe haven and a refuge, a fallback position, which is what the Inland Pacific Northwest are. Idaho, Montana, Wyoming, Eastern Washington, and Eastern Oregon are where conservative Christian-minded people are strategically relocating to in preparation for the challenges ahead and just to be free or freer than where they left until then. Now, let's get, I guess, right into the news and commentary brought to you by Glenn Tate and the 299 Days book series. Go to 299days.com to learn more about the 10 book series, including the audiobooks about the partial collapse and rebuilding. We always look for restoration. It's not about doom and gloom and the war of the skies falling. It's about very challenging times coming and looking ahead, being visionaries, looking ahead to the restoration, what we want that to look like to reinstill Americanism, our American heritage, and our values, right? That's what it's all about. But in the meantime, we do have some challenges. I want to remind you to please lift up Pastor Tim Remington in your prayers. He was miraculously spared. His life was spared last Sunday when he was shot down in the parking lot of the church, the Altar Church. The guy is an amazing pastor that has affected so many lives, and the testimonies that have rolled forward about people's lives that have been touched by this pastor. And apparently the Lord has decided he's not done with Pastor Remington. He still has more to do. So remember to hold their family and Pastor Tim and the whole congregation up in your prayers. We are so grateful that we're allowed to keep Pastor Tim around for who knows how long. In international news, U.S. and South Korean troops staged a big amphibious landing exercise on Saturday, storming simulated North Korean beach defenses amid heightened tensions and threats by the North to annihilate its enemies. Now, when we say Saturday, we say that's today. But remember, for these guys, this was almost 24 hours ago, the place. It was Friday to us. It was Saturday to them. The landing and assault drills on South Korea's east coast were part of 8 weeks of joint exercises between the allies, which the South has said are the largest ever. And North Korea has denounced the exercise, as they always do, as nuclear war moves, which is interesting because they're the ones that are setting off nuclear weapons and firing off long-range missiles in violation of agreements. But it's the South. It's preparing to be a deterrent to the North, and it's the South Korea and the United States that are doing nuclear war moves. But tensions are as high as ever over there, especially now that we have two North Korean satellites floating above our heads with nobody knowing what's inside of them. Across the nation, this was a very interesting headline. Fears in the Muslim U.S. capital. That's the headline. This is from the dailybeast.com, which is a reputed left-wing rag. And it says, among the halal restaurants, the meat markets, and the hookah bars of this working-class Detroit suburb, the topic of Donald Trump is terrorizing the local population. Love the choice of words. Among the Muslim community in the state, the notion that they might one day be rounded up and herded into internment camps is a distant but not utterly outlandish possibility. So they expect that they're going to be going to death camps if Trump becomes president, which would be laughable if so many people didn't actually take this tripe from the Daily Beast seriously. When the reality of this is, the Muslims are state sanctioned and protected, a new protected class. In fact, the FBI has removed references to Islam from its counterterrorist training, and they're slowly but gradually replacing it with right-wing terror threat indoctrination. So what grabbed me, though, was just the title alone. Fears in the U.S., in the Muslim U.S. capital. Let that just hang out there for a little bit and just meditate on that one. That we've come to the point in our country now, the Muslims have a separate U.S. capital. Divided we fall, right? And this is intentional. Lexington, of all places, last week proposed a semi-automatic gun ban, because it's going to make him safer. And here's the irony of this. For those of you who have maybe just haven't reviewed your history, Lexington is one of the places where the initial battles took place. Remember the story, Paul Revere, the regulars are coming, the regulars are coming. Okay, he's talking about the Redcoats, the British. They were coming to disarm the citizens, and that's where they stood with their pastors out in front with their congregations, and they threw down with the British to keep their arms. That happened at the bridge at Concord and another town in Lexington, on Lexington Green. That kicked off the Revolutionary War. In that very same town, that historic place, just blocks away, they were introducing measures to disarm American citizens. Isn't that something? From countercurrentnews.com, new federal guidelines have just been introduced across the country. And what they mandate is quite disturbing to civil libertarians. It should disturb most of us. The FBI has now instructed high schools across the nation to report students who in any way criticize government policies and what the report phrases as Western corruption. The FBI is interested in determining, as part of some warped pre-crime program, who might become potential future terrorists. The FBI warns in their report that anarchist extremists are no different than ISIS terrorists. And of course, they get to write the definition of what an anarchist extremist is, or anti-government for that matter. So they have this program called Preventing Violent Extremism in Schools. They have an interactive web page that walks you through this learning scenario on what to look out for extremism. And they've since wiped any reference of Islam from their website. They note that the FBI cautions teachers to avoid the appearance of discrimination in carrying out the order to spy on students and report them to the Bureau. Now, many people point out that this is really oriented toward finding domestic Islamic extremists who want to join ISIS or recruit within the borders of the United States, but they are torn asunder from within because, meanwhile, they are, on one hand, looking for domestic extremists among the Muslim community. They won't say Muslim community, so they replace it with right-wing extremism, which is the real agenda. So they're going to self-censor to make sure no Muslims are offended while they are looking for people searching for ISIS and inserting all of the language oriented toward domestic right-wing extremism. Very interesting times. We have a very confused, like in the Bible, you will grope at like at noonday, like in the dark. You'll be confused in your mind. Everything we do is just going to be chaotic and out of order and a mess. And here we are. You can actually go to the FBI page and see the resources that are available for the schools to use. We'll link this in our highlights and resources posting later this afternoon, but that's at CVE, Charlie Victor Echo, CVE.FBI.gov. You can go there and check that out for yourself. Huntsville, Alabama, from EAG News. School officials in Huntsville plan on tracking students' social media accounts as part of a new system that will also levy punishments based on their posts, regardless of whether they are private or public. So now the schools are policing the behavior of students outside of school. At the very same time, they are asking schools to report any type of anti-government sentiments. So when are they going to start kicking kids out of school because they have a picture of a Confederate flag on their Facebook page or on Me Flag or religious references? This is really interesting. If you remember, not too long ago, Obama announced that they are going to appoint a czar to hunt right-wing extremists. They announced a plan just 2 weeks after it announced their plan to globalize local police departments through strong cities networks. The Obama administration has added a new tool in its fight against violent extremism. And that is going to be this new czar. The person who heads that new effort will target extremists who plan mass shootings
hold racist, bigoted, or anti-government views, or see themselves as sovereign citizens. So mass shooting is categorically the same as someone who holds bigoted views, that means traditional marriage, or anti-government views, that means pro-constitution. We'll be back in a minute.
Moody's Analytics, Bloomberg, and Standard & Poor's. What do they all have in common? Well, they're all telling us that there's major, major financial hurdles on the horizon. Hello, everyone. Fox 519 here, bringing you the news that matters to your pocketbook as patriots and preppers. Last week, I brought you a report about 13 major retailers closing the door. We're going to dive more in depth on that this week on Eye in the Economy, brought to you by Radio Free Redoubt. Hello, everyone. Fox 519 here. Over the past 8 weeks, you've heard our commercial for SistersCoffeeRoasters.com, and I wanted to take a few minutes to talk to you about the quality of their product. When you think about the collapse, our minds normally drift toward things like the three Bs: beans, bullets, and Band-Aids. But I want you to add another letter, C, for coffee. Basic things like coffee are mood boosters, and those are very, very important in a collapse situation. Nothing is worse than being in a stressful environment and not having anything to look forward to each morning as you wake up. You should store coffee. Yes, you can store the low-quality stuff in the number 10 cans, but I would encourage you to go with a quality product, and that product is coffee from SistersCoffeeRoasters.com. Their roasted or unroasted beans are some of the best you can get. You should make sure, as you think about your future, do you want to wake up to low-quality, stale-tasting coffee, or do you want to wake up to a vibrant-tasting coffee that will help you slip your boots on in the morning and be ready to rebuild the redoubt? Get yours today. That's SistersCoffeeRoasters.com. Two sisters and an amazing quality coffee. Welcome back, everyone. What a week, huh? Remember last week when I brought you two stories on how poorly the jobs market is doing? Well, I want to elaborate on that tonight. In fact, seven states are already in the throes of depression, and yet mainstream economists mentioned last week that everything is going okay. This couldn't be any further from the truth. Earlier this month, Bloomberg released a report called, quote, "The U.S. States Where Recession is Already a Reality." And it was very telling. In fact, Bloomberg reported that Alaska, North Dakota, West Virginia, and Wyoming are all in a recession. And there are three other states at serious risk of prolonged declines, according to Moody's Analytics. The three states that are, quote, "at risk of prolonged declines" are Louisiana, New Mexico, and Oklahoma. Now, what those seven states all have in common, is a strong dependence on the energy industry. Now, I work for a company that has, here in the Redoubt, that has close ties to that industry, and I can absolutely verify that companies like Plains Midstream, Key Energy, and Tesoro are all having major problems paying their vendors for services. Last year, 67 oil and gas companies in the United States filed for bankruptcy, and approximately 130,000 good-paying jobs were lost at the end of 2015. Now, I know the price of oil has creeped up, but at this rate, the price of oil does not go back up to $98 a barrel, and I have said this in the past, it is going to cause major, major issues. But let's go deeper for a moment. Moody's Analytics is reporting that a whopping 35% of all oil and gas companies around the planet are failing or look at possible risk of bankruptcy. And the financial institutions that have been backing up these energy companies are starting to get very, very nervous. We know that Wells Fargo and JP Morgan have all said there's going to be another economic collapse. And both those companies, as I reported in the past, have taken serious steps to begin prepping their employees to deal with bankrupts and an economic downturn. Does anyone feel like we're beginning to repeat the early stages of 2008? Now, it's not just the oil industry that's having problems too. According to CNBC, corporate profits in the United States have now declined for three straight quarters. And it's the very first time since that's happened since the last recession. Now, as these corporate profits fall, layoffs are starting to increase. I reported to you last week that 13 major retailers are shutting down all over America, and with the most recent being the Sports Authority filing bankruptcy last Friday, saying they were potentially going to close more stores than they first thought they had to do. Another fact. According to the firm of Challenger Gray & Christmas, the number of job cuts in this country shot up 218% in January. Yes, it's starting to look like 2008 all over again, and I'm convinced that it'll be much, much harder, if not impossible, to find a decent job, decent paying job here in America. The American dream may finally be dead. Want to know a few more facts? Here are some numbers that indicate the U.S. is headed towards a major economic slowdown. U.S. exports were down 7% on a year-over-year basis in December. U.S. manufacturing has been in contraction now for 4 straight months in a row. U.S. factory orders have fallen for 14 months in a row. The Restaurant Performance Index in the United States has dropped to the lowest level since 2008. Orders for Class 8 trucks in the United States have dropped by 48% on a year-over-year basis in January. But don't worry, the mainstream media continues to try to convince all of us that everything is going to be just fine. In fact, CNN has even run an article that says, quote, the U.S. recession fears fade after market rally. And the Wall Street Journal published an article that says the U.S. economy is in good shape. How can this possibly be when the numbers don't lie? Don't you love it when they continue to try to pacify us with bread and circuses? Folks, I know sometimes my news isn't good, but these items you can use when talking to the masses out there. Use the numbers. They never lie. Keep your focus in the coming weeks. Thanks again for listening for Eye on the Economy and Radio Free Readout. This is Fox 519 signing off. God bless.
There is an exodus happening in America today, from cities full of crime and corruption to the rural areas of clean and sustainable living. Like-minded patriots are coming to North Idaho in search of a simpler, self-reliant lifestyle. I'm Chris Walsh, broker and owner of Revolutionary Realty, based in the heart of America's great redoubt, North Idaho. Sometimes God puts you somewhere for a special reason. For me, I believe it's to help like-minded patriots find safety and security for their loved ones. At Revolutionary Realty, we educate buyers about solar power, growing food, obtaining water, and personal security. I became a realtor in 2008 at the bottom of the real estate market, but not the top. I believe that there is a grand plan, and that I'm just a part of it. My job is to help people discover and relocate to America's great redoubt. Call a revolutionary today at 208-667-1776 or visit us at revrealty.us to learn more. That's www.revrealty.us, and God bless you.
This is the Voice of the American Redoubt. Thank you for sticking with us. Going into segment two. Segment two of Radio Free Redoubt today is brought to you by Werks Holsters. That's spelled W-E-R-K-Z. That is a Christian Patriot-owned business who strategically relocated into the American Redoubt. And they have a lifetime guarantee on all their products. Great products. I have Werks Holsters, and so does Mrs. Schmidt. Go and check them out, works.com. And don't forget to use your coupon code RFR for your purchase and for your discount. And they have a lifetime guarantee on all their products. A couple of announcements I wanted to make. For those of you who have not had the distinct honor and pleasure to hear constitutional attorney Chris Ann Hall speak in person, you've missed out. But there is an opportunity. Multiple opportunities, in fact, and we always try to keep you informed when she's in the area. Chris Ann Hall is going to be in Yakima. Now, that's pretty centrally located for a lot of our listeners. Whether you're in Wenatchee, Tri-Cities, Yakima, Moses Lake, it's not too far for you to go. So I want you to put this on your calendars. April 23rd, that's Saturday at 10 a.m. That's going to happen from 10 to noon in Yakima. The specific location is still to be announced, but that's okay. It doesn't matter. You know right now that on the 23rd, you need to start driving toward Yakima. And between now and then, we'll have the locations for you. We'll post that on a Facebook posting. I'll mention it in the future. And of course, you can always go to the chrisannhall.com and click on her event schedule. But this one's going to be about Article 5 and nullification. Very important. Two constitutional and legal remedies. How do they work? What are their benefits? What are their risks? How do they work together? And that presentation is going to cut through all the myths, hype, and hysteria. Nothing but cold, hard facts and truth that will help you prepare for the real life battle ahead. That's also free admission, by the way.
They do take donations. That's all she operates on is donations. They don't charge for those events. Here's another event. I will be speaking at La Belle La Vie in the Spokane Valley on the 28th of March at 6 p.m. Last month, their monthly meeting for the Spokane County Constitutional Republicans. Pastor Sharam Hadian spoke and packed out the house, which is no surprise. I will be there on the 28th that evening. That's Monday night. It's the last Monday night of the month when they hold those. And I will be speaking about some of the issues that I've been talking about here on the show. I want to delve into those a little bit deeper and to a different audience for many of those who have maybe missed Radio Free Readout recently or those who are not aware of it yet. So fresh meat. It'll be great. No, those great patriots over there, and I know a lot of them are listeners, but I love being able to meet people, look them in the eye, shake their hands, and it's just always a blessing. You need that, right? We got to encourage and build up one another, the edification of the body. That's what that's about. There's a couple things I wanted to get back to before I go the back stretch, the long stretch. Covering pacifism versus militarism from a Christian perspective. But Obama pleads the case this week for accessing now all devices. We have to. This is from Yahoo.com. Of course, several outlets have carried this story, but President Barack Hussein Obama on Friday made a passionate case for mobile devices to be built in such a way as to allow government, the all-seeing, all-knowing, to gain access to personal data if needed, only if needed, to prevent a terrorist attack, of course, or, drumroll, to enforce tax laws. What? So we've got to be able to break into your data that the industry works diligently on, hard on, that the consumer counts on the ultimate level of security, especially with banking, finances, right? But the government wants to be able to get into it to prevent a terrorist attack or enforce tax laws. That is... well, it's just, I'm surprised they admitted it. He made clear that despite his commitment to Americans' privacy, that made me actually really laugh. Okay, let me start over. He made clear that despite his commitment to Americans' privacy and civil liberties, a balance was needed to allow some intrusion when needed. Now, this is the same administration that says they need to start hunting right-wing extremists. And they are also the ones that are going to determine when it's needed, when these intrusions might be needed to enforce tax laws or prevent a terrorist attack, right? Because, you know, all these right-wing Christians are carrying out terrorist attacks. Wow. The question we now have to ask is if technologically it's possible to make an impenetrable device or system where the encryption is so strong that there is no key, there's no door at all, and then how do we apprehend all the child pornographers? How do we solve or disrupt terrorist plots? Oh, now we need it for child pornographers. But how did all these child pornographers end up in prison before this effort to break into encrypted cell phones that they need a backdoor for? That's the emotional heart tug string thing. There are so many ways to snatch these guys up before encryption came along. How do we solve or disrupt terrorist plots? Name a terrorist plot you've solved or disrupted. Because you've been able to harvest all of this cell phone information and texting information that you're so proud of. Here's an ad that I grabbed and I posted over at Amron.com, the American Readout Radio Operators Network. It's for the P6 Intercept, a passive communications intercept system that they're marketing to law enforcement agencies around the world. They boast that this lightweight system enables unprecedented high-quality interception of the highest amount of cell phone call and text message traffic of anything else out there on the market. Because we know that they've been able to stop all of these terrorist attacks because the device is capable of harvesting as many people's phone calls and texts as possible, right? Name one. Europe is way ahead on the civil liberty theft curve than the United States, in terms of legalizing it anyway. They can justify fighting terrorism. They've got all the stuff in place. And still, how in the world did the Paris terrorist attacks ever happen with all of these capabilities they've given to themselves? They're using it. They're collecting information on citizens without warrants, without justification. Well, they can justify it in their own minds, but they have carte blanche now. In the name of fighting terrorism, and none of this stuff, which pulls in all of our data and all of our information, building a database, trackable, researchable, retrievable database on all of your movements, all of your contacts, every person that you make contact with, where you travel to. They have all of that to fight terrorism, and they've not stopped any terrorist attacks that I'm aware of. They usually use it from infiltrating cells, and it's usually an agent provocateur that talks them into doing something that's illegal, and boom, they nail them. And of course, in the process, they're getting all their cell phone information. But by that time, they have the probable cause to get the warrant to do it legally. This is just pure carte blanche harvesting, and it's illegal. Well, they'll pass laws, but it's unlawful. It's a violation of the Constitution. Straight up. But, you know, hey, the Constitution's outdated. I mean, why do we keep bringing that thing up? Matter of fact, if you think it's broke, we should have an Article 5 convention, right? Well, then we'll fix it. Open up that Pandora's box. Is there anybody you can think of that you trust to approach the Constitution to fix it? It's not broke if we just start actually following it. That's the standard. That's the standard. That's one of the arguments that Obama was making here. He says, my conclusion so far is that you cannot take an absolutist view on saying yes or no to encryption. Whenever you're in question in our republic, so long as it stands, which it's wobbly, very shakily still standing on what's remaining of the pillars that made America what it is, we still have a constitution. You follow that, and that clarifies everything. It clears a lot of stuff up. And even if it hurts, the founding father said, I would accept the danger of living free under a constitution than the safety of living under a police state. I'm rewording that. Paraphrased. So the Justice Department has sought to frame the Apple case as one not about undermining encryption. A U.S. Federal Bureau of Investigation court order issued to Apple targets a non-encrypted barrier on one iPhone, but Apple says this is not true. That this has actually been they've had to fight this 14 or 15 times. I can't remember exactly how much. I had the story where the FBI's approached them to break into 14 or 15 phones. This is not an isolated incident. And they also said it's also a lie what the FBI is saying, that it'll only work on this one phone. We just want you to make a code that will only allow us to get into this one phone. And Apple themselves, the developers, are saying this is not even possible. If you open that, it's a master key. With slight modification, you can break into anything you want, which is what they want, which Apple knows. And that's a breach of ethics and the trust that they've built with their consumers. They promised them they would deliver this service, and they have. And they're sticking to their guns on this. They act like this is the only way we can catch a tax evader, a terrorist, or child pornographer. No, that's completely untrue. In fact, what if they did build into it? Because we're advocates of one-time pad encryption. You can build encryption that you can send over your phone, unencrypted over your phone, but you can send an encrypted message and they can't break it. They will never be able to break it, a one-time pad, as long as it's done properly. So the next plan is to ban all encryption. That's on the horizon, my friends. We'll be back in a minute. This is the Voice of the American Redoubt. Don't go away.
In Seven Cows, Ugly and Gaunt, Book 1, Behold Darkness and Sorrow, Daniel Walker begins having prophetic dreams. Since he is a new Christian and unfamiliar with the Holy Scriptures, he turns to an older pastor to help interpret the dreams. Through one of his dreams, Daniel learns of an imminent threat of an electromagnetic pulse attack which will wipe out America's electric grid, sending the country into a technological dark age. Living in a nation where all life-sustaining systems of support are completely dependent on electricity and computers, the odds for survival are dismal. If they want to live, Daniel and his friends must focus on faith, wits, and preparation to be ready before the lights go out. Buy your copy of Seven Cows, Ugly and Gaunt, Book 1, Behold Darkness and Sorrow, by best-selling author Mark Goodwin, in paperback, Kindle, or audio edition from Amazon.com today.
You're listening to Radio Free Readout, the voice of the American Readout.
Very specifically, we have to ask ourselves and answer a question, every individual. Are we a loyalist or are we a patriot? Are we God-fearing, freedom-loving, self-reliant Americans? Or are we government-dependent, constitution-ignoring socialists? That is the question we all have to answer. And I appreciate Radio Free Readout because they've been answering that question quite well to many people in this area for a long, long time.
This is the Voice of the American Readout. Thank you for sticking around. And we are going into segment three, the last stretch, the last 30-minute stretch here at the Voice of the American Readout. The Fed coats are coming. There's your warning. You can email me at johnjacob@radiofreeredoubt.com. I love fielding your questions. And we have a question I'm going to talk about here. I'm going to go into depth on that. My perspective. Don't forget to visit us also on facebook.com/radiofreeredoubt and our disaster, nationwide disaster communications network, AMRON, the American Readout Radio Operators Network, with ham and non-ham radio operators all across the country in all 50 states, Canada and Puerto Rico. Citizens just like you and me, training and preparing in case of that event one day in the future, who knows, that we can stay connected and share information in a grid down emergency disaster type situation. Great, great folks. I mean, just such good people. That is such a blessing. What a blessing that whole thing has turned into to be. Definitely exceeded my expectations. I got an email here. I want to get right down to it because I'm going to just burn through all this information as fast as I can because I have a lot to follow up with on this one email. I enjoy your program and perspective on much and thought you might be able to add to the internal debate I'm having about what I believe Jesus' teaching in regard to pacifism is, which I believe he advocated, versus your assumed position that we wouldn't have a country or freedom if it wasn't for our willingness to fight. What would you tell a Mennonite or Amish when he defends pacifism in contrast to your view? Thank you for your opinions and input. Sincerely, Krista. Well, Krista, thank you very much for that very sincere, honest, candid question. And that is a very legitimate question. And you're not the only one who's having this internal debate. I have it too. And that's a good thing. We should always be keeping ourselves in check. When we take a worldview, we need to fully explore it. We need to fully understand what we stand for and why. And is this in line or in conflict with Scripture? That should be our standard. Okay, so you're not alone here. And I've had to think about this a lot, especially because I come from a background. I'm a former soldier. I think militarily. I mean, that's when that is the only solution, then the military or the soldier is the tool to enforce policy or the will of the government or to defend your country, whatever it is. So that's how my mind's oriented toward. And then I understand, I also see the teachings of Christ. And is this in conflict? Well, let me answer it this way. Ecclesiastes 3:1-8 says that everything has a time. Everything has a season. To everything there is a season. There is a time for every purpose under heaven, a time to be born and a time to die, a time to plant, a time to pluck what is planted, a time to kill and a time to heal, a time to break down and a time to build up, a time to weep, a time to laugh, a time to mourn and a time to dance, a time to cast away stones and a time to gather stones, a time to embrace and a time to refrain from embracing, a time to gain and a time to lose, a time to keep and a time to throw away. I'm almost done. A time to tear and a time to sow. A time to keep silence and a time to speak. There's a time to love and a time to hate, and a time of war and a time of peace. So to the question, what would I tell a Mennonite or Amish? Nothing. I'm neither militaristic nor a pacifist. I'm a soldier, and the Lord gave me a warrior spirit. He instilled in me a hatred for injustice. I got in more fights in school than anyone I know of, confronting bullies, stepping in when people were being attacked, when they were being wronged. And I've told this story before, but as a Christian, I credit him also for a spirit of long-suffering. I have turned the other cheek many more times than I have chose to stand my ground and defend myself. There are many injustices I see in our culture, and almost always my response is to go to prayer. That's where we should be doing 90% of our fighting, and seeking counsel of others, and prepare a message to point out the injustice and slice through the lies, such as when the Christian-owned business in Oregon was fined nearly $140,000 and their business essentially shut down. Why? Because of the lie perpetuated by the state, which is in rebellion to God, saying the owners of Sweet Cakes Bakery were practicing hate and violating the so-called equality laws. That was when a homosexual couple demanded that they bake a cake for the wedding, which was an affront to God and shocked the conscience of the Christian business owners who have a constitutionally recognized, protected, right to practice their religious beliefs. That includes not being forced to do something that is strictly in conflict with one's religious and moral convictions, blatantly unconstitutional. But how does one define pacifism and militarism? Where do you draw the line on pacifism? I contend that pacifism isn't even the right word to use. I also contend that nowhere does Jesus teach pacifism. He teaches meekness and implores us to be peacemakers. Paul said, "Be at peace with them so long as you are able to." The right phrase should be long-suffering.
The word pacifism implies no limits. Do what you want to me or others, and I'll just stand by and do nothing. Long-suffering means I'll put up with a lot, but there's a line that when crossed, I will resist. That is the model that God has set for us. There's a lot he will put up. God is patient and, I would say, long-suffering. He puts up with a lot, but there's a line. At some point, he says, enough. The hammer's coming down. Was Jesus a pacifist when he met Joshua on the road outside of Jericho with a sword in his hand? Let me read this to you. And it came to pass when Joshua was by Jericho that he lifted up his eyes and looked, and behold, there stood a man opposite him with a sword drawn in his hand. Doesn't sound very pacifistic to me. And Joshua went unto him and said, are you for us or for our adversaries? And he said, neither. But as captain of the army of the Lord, I am now come. Drop to your face, take off your shoes, you're standing on holy ground. And the captain of the Lord's army said to Joshua, loosen your sandals, your shoes, from off your feet. And he laid out the battle plan for them to destroy and take down Jericho, save the prostitute, Rahab, and her family, because she was part of the underground when she hid the spies and diverted the troops that were looking for her under penalty of death if she got caught. Here's a fascinating story. Abram, who later became Abraham, rescues Lot from a confederacy of kings who came through the area plundering and taking slaves and loot, including Lot, and which is Abram's nephew, and his whole family. Abram assembled his army, a militia of 318 fighting men, overtook the kings, killed them, and retrieved Lot and his family, women, children, livestock, everything. And then he was met by King Melchizedek, which is many biblical scholars say that this is Christ pre-incarnate. This is a picture of Christ or Christ himself appearing at this time, celebrating the victory with Abram and accepted tithes from Abram. That's not pacifistic. Jesus didn't die on the cross because he was pacifistic. He did it because it's what led to victory over death. You can't raise from the dead if you're not dead. He allowed it to fulfill a much higher purpose and to fulfill prophecy. And now he's alive right now. For everything, there is a reason. There is a season. There is a time to kill and a time to heal, a time for war and a time for peace. So I guess to the Mennonite or the Amish, I would say, are you enjoying your freedom? The freedom that other Christians had to fight for? The freedom you wouldn't have if those Christian patriots hadn't have prevailed? Look at how you would not be allowed to live that lifestyle if we were owned by any other government in the world. Or many others, systems. And I might not say it, but I might think to myself, enjoy it while it lasts. Nations rise and fall under God's watchful eye and by his hand. In a speech by Benjamin Franklin requesting prayer during the Constitutional Convention, they had reached gridlock. And they'd been meeting for 5 weeks. Now, this is what Benjamin Franklin said. In this situation of this assembly, let me make sure that I get this right. Here we go. In this situation of this assembly, groping as it were in the dark to find political truth and scarce able to distinguish it when presented to us, how has it happened, sir, that we have not hitherto once thought of humbly applying to the Father of lights to illuminate our understandings? In the beginning of the contest with Great Britain, when we were sensible of danger, we had daily prayer in this room for the divine protection. Our prayers, sir, were heard, and they were graciously answered. All of us who were engaged in the struggle must have observed frequent instances of a superintending providence in our favor.
I have lived, sir, a long time, and the longer I live, the more convincing proofs I see of this truth, that God governs in the affairs of men. And if a sparrow cannot fall to the ground without his notice, is it probable that an empire can rise without his aid? Now that same body, close quote, now that same body of commissioned of men commissioned others, mostly Christians, to take up arms against a tyrannous government that was in power at that time. It was at extremely high risk of failure. They relied on the Lord daily. It required armed men. It required not pacifists, but militaristic men and methods, many of those men led by ordained ministers. I'm reading a book right now called The Coming Revolution. It's the political writings and speeches of Patrick Pierce. Now, I'll get to that in a second. Let me quote this. A thing that stands demonstrable, easy to demonstrate. A thing that stands demonstrable is that nationhood is not achieved otherwise than in arms. Ireland, unarmed, will attain just as much freedom as it is convenient for England to give her. Ireland, armed, will attain ultimately just as much freedom as she wants. There's a lot of confusion in the church today, and there's little balance or discernment. The extreme ends teaching either total pacifism or let's fight now, what are we waiting for? And there's not discernment for understanding the time and the season that you're in and acting appropriately to that under his guidance and seeking his counsel and his prayer and the counsel of others, wise counsel of others. The Bible says a lot about seeking the counsel of others when you're going to war, even. There's a book that I recommend for Christians today that are conflicted by this to understand where our message has morphed, how it's morphed. It's called The New England Pulpit and the American Revolution. It's written by Alice Baldwin. I've mentioned it before. No relation to Chuck Baldwin. That's when American pastors preached politics, resisted tyranny, and founded a nation of the Bible. That's the subtitle to that book. Christian pastors all across the American colonies were preparing their congregations for that season. That necessary ugliness of war, which should be avoided at all costs. A revolution, civil war, a war of any kind should be avoided if at all possible, whenever possible, and should be considered only after all other peaceful means have been explored and exhausted. But when it is absolutely necessary, you must do it like you want to win it, all in, completely. Is there such a thing as total pacifism? Or is it truly long-suffering, and some have different tolerance levels, different levels of suffering that they can put up with? Everyone has a line in the sand, which, when crossed, will evoke resistance responses. Everyone, especially when attacked. You take a person who's suicidal, standing on a bridge, ready to jump. Now, grab him by the shirt and yank him off the bridge and shove his head into a 5-gallon bucket of water and see what happens. Where's your line in the sand for resisting evil or threats, tyranny? Here's an example. You're camping with your family and your 5-year-old is playing in the bushes 50 feet away. You see a cougar 50 feet farther, crouched down, fixed on your child and moving in. What do? You grab your gun, you start screaming at the mountain lion as you close the distance, placing yourself between the child and the mountain lion. Well, except you're a pacifist, so you don't have a gun. But you grab the shovel next to the fire pit. The cougar runs off into the woods, and there you are. Nicely done. Now, here's another example. Well, that's an animal. Okay, you're working on your car under the hood, while your kid's playing in the front yard and a blacked out van rolls up to the curb, the side door opens and some creep says to your kid, "Hey, come here, you want a free puppy?" And he lunges and grabs your kid, throws him into the van and he speeds off. After watching the whole thing unfold, you say, "Hey, honey, we got to make another kid. We lost one." Now that's a pacifist. What if a man walks into your home and says, hey, I want to sexually assault your wife? And you say, I wish you wouldn't. And he says, step aside, McFly. Now you're in a pacifistic versus manly duty conundrum. Maybe you can reason with him. Maybe you can talk him out of it. Maybe placing your hand on his arm will let you know you're really serious. You may even bow up against him and step in between him and your wife. You could push him. But then when he punches you in the nose, you have a choice to make. As the assailant escalates the levels of violence, you have a choice to make. Do you reach a certain point and say, okay, I'll push him, but that's as far as I go. I can't actually strike him with a closed fist. Or you can escalate appropriate to the level, your resistance level, appropriate to the threat, to stop the threat. Appropriately matching the level of the threat, even up to the point of using lethal force. But of course, that's a real bad guy. That's different. That's not the same thing as resisting government. Really? What if it were a police officer who walked into the house and said the same thing? That complicates things, doesn't it? Now you have someone doing something illegal and unlawful, acting under the color of authority. Now, a true pacifist might say, well, then after the assault, I would file a complaint with the police department. The officer would be fired and probably go to jail, and the system would make sure justice happens. That's not my place. You know that there are actually cases, court rulings, and case law establishing that the citizen has the right to use any level of appropriate force to stop a crime in self-defense when committed unlawfully under the color of authority, including up to lethal force. But that's a whole different issue. We're talking pacifism. But for some folks, it makes it easier to make that decision to resist when they learn that it's written down somewhere on paper. But that's the tragedy of where our culture, including the church, has sunk into, where we've allowed so much of our heritage, that special ingredient, to be snatched away from us. The founding fathers, including ordained ministers, fully understood the concept of the law of nature and nature's God. Some things don't need to be written down. They're natural laws. That is why many of the founding fathers argued against having a Bill of Rights in the first place. Because there are so many natural rights that belong to us simply because we breathe, that to list 10 of them could be used one day to argue that the other rights don't exist since they're not written down. Like forcing a Christian couple to use their skills and talents to produce a masterpiece for the celebration of something God's word clearly says is an abomination. Or having your children exposed to curriculum that violates your religious beliefs. Funded by you, but against your wishes and sometimes without even your knowledge. Or being ordered to have chemicals pumped into your child, despite the fact that you've discovered evidence that the vaccines might be harmful. Or having your children taken away because you're teaching them extremist ideas, like the Bible. So to the pacifist, I would ask, where do you stand on armed church security? Is that against the teachings of Christ? Jesus told his own disciples to take swords. The second time he sent them out, the first time he said, take nothing. But the tactical situation had changed. Something changed that prompted Christ to order them, if you don't even have a sword, sell your cloak and get one. When the situation changes, when the season changes, when the time changes, there is a time to go out without nothing because it'll all be provided for you. And there is a time to go out and take all of your gear with you, including weapons. There is a time for everything. Several church shootings have been stopped by Christians with guns. They didn't take a life. They saved lives. If you do nothing, especially when you have the means and ability and those with the training, just because resisting evil would be the unchristian thing to do, that is evil itself, I would argue. I submit that that is evil. Dietrich Bonhoeffer, the pastor, very famous Bonhoeffer from World War II, said, silence in the face of evil is itself evil. God will not hold us guiltless. Not to speak is to speak. Not to act is to act. What's he saying there? This is Dietrich Bonhoeffer during pre-World War II, Nazi Germany, who was otherwise a pacifist. He joined the intelligence services to act as a double agent. He realized, as long as I stand here and let people be murdered and do nothing, because I'm a pacifist, I'm actually advocating it. I am giving consent by taking no action or not speaking out. He signed up with the German Secret Service to serve as a double agent. Well, that's illegal. That's breaking the law of the land. While traveling to church conferences over Europe, he was supposed to be collecting information about the places he visited, but was instead trying to help Jews escape Nazi oppression. More felonies! Bonhoeffer also became part of the plot to overthrow and later assassinate Hitler. More felonies! His tactics were changing. He had gone to America to become a guest lecturer, but he said, I made a mistake coming here while my country is going through suffering. Why should I be different? Now, he was never at the center of the plans to kill Hitler, but he was privy to information inside those plots. He went from pacifist to underground resistance leader. And I've got several of his books right here on my bookshelf about Bonhoeffer and his stories. Now, some people resist, while some people are pacifist. There's a book here, I wouldn't say pacifist. They broke the law. They operated underground churches. But Richard Wurmbrand, I can't even convey to you how powerful his testimony is to me. And it should be mandatory reading for all Christians, especially in the days that we're faced with now. Why did they not fight? Why did they not join the resistance? Why didn't they fight like other people like Solzhenitsyn implored the citizens to do in Soviet Russia when they were hauling people off to the gulags? He said, you should fight. We waited too long to fight. Now we can't. We don't even have the option to fight. We messed up. Some people are called to resist and some people are not. And you have to listen to that. And you have to listen to the consequence. You have to accept the consequences of that. If you don't resist, you'll die in some places. In other places, if you resist, you'll die. Or if you don't resist, you'll die. But you have to prayerfully approach that decision. There are different places around the world right now with churches operating underground, breaking the law, and in some of those places, they are physically resisting with military arms, mostly against Muslims that are hunting them down to do things to them that I don't even want to say on the air. In ISIS, Christians are arming themselves. They are fighting. They're setting up ambushes. They are protecting and moving their children and their wives from one village to the next while the men are in running gun battles to keep these guys at bay, trying to kill the people who are trying to kill them. Is that unchristian-like? Should we march over there and wag our fingers in their faces telling them how unchristian-like they are? I don't dare. Nigeria, same thing. Sudan, Christians fought against the Muslim tyrants until back to the point where they now have their own country because Christians armed themselves and they fought. They resisted the government. In Hungary, that is a Christian nation. It says that they are a Christian nation according to the constitution that they all ratified in 2012. The European Union, the higher governing body, is admonishing them for their religious intolerance. But it doesn't really matter to them because they're standing for what they feel called to do. There's a time and a season for everything, and our time is out here. Join us tomorrow night for our weekly podcast at 8 p.m. at RadioFreeRedoubt.com. You all have a blessed week. God bless all of you. We'll talk to you next week.
Good evening, everyone. John Jacob Schmidt here. I had a full day here dealing with some unexpected issues that required my immediate attention. It's all good. Everything is great. But it precluded me from being able to work on tonight's podcast. So tonight, when I get everything wrapped up, I'll be putting the finishing touches on this week's Partisan Radio so I can record that and upload it in the morning and have that uploaded by around noon tomorrow, Monday. Yesterday's broadcast on the American Christian Network was a very popular broadcast where in the third segment, at about the 30-minute mark, I answered a listener's letter from a young lady who's struggling with pacifism versus militarism. Where should we stand as Christians? This is really important because we're increasingly faced with the prospect of having to resist tyranny once again. Is that the right thing to do? There's more on this topic, of course. I believe it was last year that I did a podcast entitled Righteous Resistance. I've also been talking to Chris Ann Hall and collaborating with her on a posting I plan on producing and posting to RadioFreeRedoubt.com this week with several resources from Radio Free Redoubt, Chris Ann Hall, and her husband, who is a pastor, on this very subject. So keep checking back for that. Also, there are several events coming up over the next few months, so be watching for more details on that and be ready to mark your calendars. Many speaking engagements and other events. You can also follow us on Facebook.com/Radio Free Redoubt for the latest developments and announcements on those events and so much more. Have a blessed week, and I'll be in touch soon. This is John Jacob Schmidt. My name is your name too. Out.